August, so we're past
it. Hey, we're doing well.
Now recording. Now recording.
Oh, fuck, man. 129, 130, 131, 132, 133, 134, 135, 136,
sorry, man. This is on me, because I've been taking the numbers off him, because the algorithms hate numbers, and like...
Oh, do they?
Aye, they hate that, you know, we were doing like Rebel City, so I've taken all that. That's why they're more just like questions like, are billionaires okay, or whatever.
Aye,
it is now.
I think that's a good idea.
So with this one, I'm going to probably like chop it up into like bits and put like 20 minutes out, 20 minutes out, 20 minutes out, like, through the course of the week, and at the end of the week, like launch like the full
episode. Aye, cool, man. Good idea.
That's a good idea.
Try and do something with the YouTube channel to like just
boost that a wee bit.
Drive a bit of engagement or whatever it is. Used questions on the Spotify, and we've got a couple of responses. People responding to like Spotify polls and stuff like that. So maybe need to like think about like dropping some polls in about what do you think about this thing that we spoke about or whatever it is, you know what I mean? Like, so
we're recording, aye.
Aye.
Cool. Do you want to start?
Aye, cool. Hello, welcome to episode 137 of Rebel City Podcast. As always, here with Paul and Shep. How are you doing, guys?
Not bad.
Good.
Aye.
Bring that wee bit closer.
Just watched the first game of the season, so we're on a reasonably good mood.
Should be about that away. That's better, mate. There we go. Well, I don't know. I feel a bit flat after the performance.
Aye, it was a bit.
But Celtic days on top.
Celtic are back. That's all that matters. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, like, we're slap bang in the middle of this Glasgow cycling thing, so getting in the day was hilarious. I paid an Uber surcharge way above what I would normally pay to get here. To get absolutely nowhere near here, and I have to walk the rest of the way. Like,
why are you guys flat after a 4-2 win?
I don't know, man. Just
a bit uninspiring, man.
The performance. It's like, I think the performance just looked a bit disjointed, and I think especially I was hoping that Celtic were going to use this pre-season to try and sort some of our problems in defence. And it just looked like...
And we lost like two really shady goals.
Really shit goals. I mean, the one for the corner, just a corner into the six-yard box, and Joe Hart just watches the ball going to the guy's head and then go where he's head into the back of the net. Like, we need a new goalkeeper. Give the new centre-half a bit of time, but when you're looking at that starting 11, the reason I'm flat is because I feel like we've regressed a wee bit.
That's interesting, because as a neutral and someone who doesn't really give a fuck, obviously, that much about Scottish football in general, I thought you guys actually, like, for a first game of the season, like, obviously pre-season's pre-season and it's never, doesn't really tell you that much. Some of the play that I saw, like, I was half watching, we were obviously chatting quite a lot through it, but when I was looking, some of the flowing, like, counters and stuff like that looked really good. from a neutral standpoint, you're, like, the two goals were maybe sloppy. One was in the 92nd minute, so just complacency first game of the season, and the other one was just a scrappy corner to give away. Happens all the time, but you've were 4-2. I mean, I thought Celtic looked pretty decent. Obviously, it's going to feel like a regression for a Celtic fan because you've got Brendan Rodgers.
I think
Rogers
the whole thing's
wheel,
just been a bit uninspiring, isn't it? We know what we're getting with Rodgers. We know what we're getting with the players, because the players are the same players largely for last year. Like, it's just you want to get into the first game of the season, dish out a tank and get a couple of new players in, get them on the score sheet and stuff like that. It's not really happening. So it's not that there's any real issue with it. It's just, I'm just a bit underwhelmed at the minute in general. I'm waiting for something to just spark a bit. But as I say, first game back, quite happy to have Celtic back. It's always good to like use as an excuse to get in and get a podcast recorded and catch up with obviously used to, you know what I mean? So,
But
it's been a couple of weeks again. You've been on holiday and moving house and so it's good to be back. Try to think, like, we were speaking last week before we couldn't get in, we were going to maybe cover some of the Hugh Edwards stuff, but I think the moment on that has sort of been and gone.
Aye, for sure.
I think when I'm looking at it this week, I'm like, what is the big thing that's, like, you know, people are talking about? For me, and maybe it's as a result of, like, the pandemic or whatever it is, but, like, Barbieheimer, like, and, you know, a wee bit of buzz around, like, sort of cinema and stuff again was kind of, like, quite nice to see. Like, I think, as always with these things, like, some of the reaction to bits and bobs on both the movies have been sort of pretty hilarious. I've not seen either yet, but I probably, like, will watch both of them at some point. Like, said to the missus, oh, here, by the way, this... Because, as I was saying to you, like, I watched some of the Barbie trailers and was like, this is clearly like dripping in sarcasm. Like, this is a complete piss take of both Barbie, people's reaction to Barbie, the guys within it having a piss take and a laugh at themselves. Like, it just looked fun in a lot of respects, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. But aye, the reaction to that has been, you know, quite wild in some respects. And then you got Oppenheimer, and I don't think you could probably have two movies that really, like, have the, you know, sort of polar opposite to each other in terms of, like, tone.
Uh-huh. I've not seen Oppenheimer yet, but I've been to see Barbie.
Right.
I've heard a couple of sort of things about Oppenheimer.
Did you wear pink?
I didn't, no, but I went to see it at the Forge. So I went to see it at the Pyramids of Giza. Aye, like the Cineworld at the Forge, and it was just, there was like fucking two people there. I love that, but...
I don't know how that place ever survived, because over the, whatever, 20, 30 years that it's been open, and I used to go quite regularly with Alex, like when she was younger, because it was always like quite handy and generally quite quiet. I've never been in to see anything in the Forge in my entire life where there has not been less than like six people there.
Uh-huh.
Like, so I don't know how it survives.
I don't know how it survives either, other than maybe took like a fucking 40-year lease or something like that. I mean, on the Oppenheimer, I've seen a few people saying stuff like, you know, again, like Tenant, like the dialogue's really low and the soundscape's really high and it's kind of off-putting. I've seen people say they went to see it at the IMAX and it was so loud, it was kind of like overstimulating for them and stuff like that. But I really want to see Oppenheimer, but let's say that I've seen Barbie.
The cast in it looks phenomenal. And I mean, the Barbie cast is also pretty, you know, stacked for, you know, good actors. Like, but I'm probably more interested to see Oppenheimer. But yeah, Nolan fanboy myself, I don't always get these movies like Tenet and Dunkirk and stuff like that. But at the same time, he is, you know, an elite level sort of director, and you know the talent and cast that he works with regularly, or love them all. Like Guy Murphy, brilliant actor, love him, and just about anything he shows up in. They're saying like Robert Downey Jr. is looking like he might be running into like a best supporting actor role and stuff like that, and even like the Lassie Pugh. I mean, is that how you pronounce it? Florence Pugh?
I think so.
She seems to be like everywhere now. I think she's in like literally every movie that's been made at the minute. But again, she's good in them, you know what I mean? Like, so fair play to her, you know what I mean? Like, but the criticism of Oppenheimer was a wee bit more, oh, you didn't show the impact on what the bombs did to Japan. And you're like, because that's not really what the movie was about. The movie was about the journey towards the bomb and the impact it had on the people's lives who built it, or were in that sort of race to build it, sort of thing. Like, so I kind of, there are movies that show the devastation, there are things out there, that documentaries and whatever else, that show that, you know, impact that the nuclear bomb had on, you know, Japan as a country. I just don't think that it was a particularly valid criticism on this one, because it was the journey to the bomb that they were exploring.
I think,
you know,
when like, I seen, before I had seen any context and before I had seen even any of the cast members, when I heard about it, I was sort of a bit myself like, do I really want to watch an American-made movie about them dropping, well, basically like war crimes? Do you know what I mean? Like, I was a bit sort of like, maybe I don't know. Like,
that's heavy going, I imagine.
I that was my sort of gut feeling, was like, don't really want to go and see a Hollywood made movie about the atomic bombs. Like, how are Japanese people going to feel about that? How's it going to go down? You know, we live in a global multicultural society, or we're supposed to anyway, or that's where. And I think, like, that was my sort of initial reaction, was that sort of like, are they going to bring into context like the impact it had? But like you're saying, it's not about that, it's about the guy himself. And I know that him personally, he was Jewish, and I think his motivation for building the bomb was to, like, you know, stop the Nazis. And then it was kind of not really used for that. It was, you know, it was like, the Japanese will never stop, and like, so we'll it was like a vulgar display of power.
The Japanese didn't stop with the bomb either. It's a complete fallacy. Uh-huh. Like, you know, I think when we see Oliver Stone did a series where he covered it really well, and this is years ago, and, you know, Japan had the first bomb, refused to surrender, had the second bomb a few days later, refused to surrender, and then the sections of the Russian army showed up in Mongolia, you know, and at the point where they were like, fuck, the Russians are here, the Japanese army surrendered. So, you know, the two bombs, although they were dropped in, they were, you know, a display of the power that the Americans now had at their disposal. It was a warning to, you know, the other members of the Axis parties and guys like the Nazis and stuff like that. The bomb was not really what actually got Japan to surrender. You know what I mean? It will have been in the mix, obviously. You know what I mean? But at the same time, it wasn't the be all and end all that it's made out to be, which I think is something that probably wouldn't have been covered in the movie either. Uh-huh. You know what I mean?
Like, found out the other night that 120 people survived both.
Heard that. As in, went through one to the lot and then survived.
So it went through like Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Yeah, they were transferred. Sort of, I've heard about this. Like a guy recants his tale that he was like essentially survived one blast, and then they like take them all over to the second city
to get treatment or whatever.
And then the bomb gets dropped.
I mean, the mega tonnage and stuff like that on those early bombs is nothing by comparison to where that technology is now.
They're talking about the Tsar bomb that the Russians tested in the 80s, which I'm pretty sure is still currently the biggest atomic bombs, like 50 Nagasakis.
Yeah. There's
so if they dropped it in New York, they're talking about like a 30 kilometer radius, whatever, it would just be like dust.
Aye.
Whereas I think in Hiroshima, it was like, what, 3 kilometers or something like that? And when you're outside of that, you could have...
Still largely like, you know, at that time anyway, wooden and paper villages and cities, you know what I mean? Like, there's
the guy that Dave's talking about that was like documented, quite a famous guy that survived both and like has done loads of interviews and stuff. He was only like something like 1,000 meters away from the blast site, but he got himself into a ditch, like flung himself down a ditch and managed to survive it.
They're also hydrogen bombs, aren't they?
That's even less believable than like Indiana Jones jumping in a fridge and surviving. You know what I mean? Like, but that is what I'm saying, that shit actually happened. I know that people survived the individual bombs. I was not aware that there were people who survived both bombs because that's wild.
Yeah, but I think like we're sort of getting off of the sort of talking about like the context of these two movies. Like, I think it just... There was like a point where I was like, this goes against all marketing, right? Like, I was watching a thing the other night where it was talking about like Blur and Oasis and how, like, you know, McGee was like that to Noel Gallagher. Like, look, Blur are just changing. So they were like, Country House is coming out in the same day as Rowett. We'll change it a week. And then they changed it a week and they changed it again. And Noel was just basically like, don't change it. Let's just go for it. And like, McGee's like, this is suicide. And it turned out to be the biggest marketing thing. And I think a similar sort of thing's happened. Like, the executives are like, we're worried about this, blah, blah, blah. And it has just been something that you just cannot predict. Yeah. Where the actual, because it seems like a weird sort of like, the right are like in Oppenheimer and the left are in Barbie and they're like, we hate the other one and we don't like the message of the other one. And it's just caused this whole sort of big, massive bubble. And people have started today, like, Barbenheimer?
Barbenheimer,
they go and see Barbie and then as an actual double bill.
There was a lot of places were actively
paying. Couldn't buy that, man. Like,
Tom Cruise was said to have been trying to get IMAXs for Mission Impossible, and they were like, well, Christopher Nolan films everything in IMAX and all of a sudden he's your guy. Like, we are not going to like give up screen space. Like, this guy is Mr. IMAX. Uh-huh. Like, he's going to be in all our IMAXs all up in the country, and it's just the way it is. And there was a lot of chat about, Tom Cruise is unhappy, blah, 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 blah. And then you see pictures of him, he's one of the first people, he's like, the day the two of them launched in, you know, Leicester Square or wherever the fuck he was, with, like, tickets to BAFE, and like, Tom Cruise was doing the Barbieheimer double bill, and you're like, two movies that just so like are diametrically opposed to each other, like became this like really like weird culture. And I think that is that cinema has no really been at its strength since the pandemic. It has become, you know, home cinema, home premieres and Amazon Prime and all these things where you can buy them like the day after they finish up in the cinema has really become like quite a prominent thing for people. And like, like, for me and Stace, right? Stace, where epilepsy is, seeking into like a cinema, like sound systems, lighting effects, and stuff like that can be really quite triggering. But, like, see when stuff new comes out and you can just put it on in the house. Like, it is like, I prefer it. Well, you can pause it, nip to the toilet, jump out for a cigarette when I was smoking, you know, whatever it is, go and fix a drink, go and make something to eat and come back, and you're still in the comfort. Like, to me, that's something that makes more sense to us now. So it does, like, so no really engaged, be like, oh, what's out in the cinema this week? But this was one of the sort of first times since the pandemic where I was like, I kind of want to go and see like this Barbie. And Stace was like, what? You know what I mean? Like, why? And I'm like, it looks funny. You know what I mean? Like, as to say, Oppenheimer's probably the type of one that I would not expect Stace to sit through, you know, a 3-hour movie about, you know, a biography. That's the type of one that I would be like, she goes to bed one night and I'll sit and watch it in the house myself. You know what I mean? Like, but the Barbie one was the one I was like, do we want to go and get Alex rounded up and we'll all go to the cinema? You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Instead was like, nah, no, really. And I was like, oh, okay then. But still might.
See, to be perfectly honest, mate, I don't blame her. Like, we went out to the Forge on a Tuesday afternoon and we got two drinks, a popcorn and two cinema tickets and it was 56 quid.
Fucking hell.
So you're like 30 quid just for your tickets, man. And like, I was like, this is, I mean, no wonder. Like, if you had fucking two Waynes, two adults,
aye,
right? I think they'd do a ticket that, a family ticket where you can take like up
two adults, two kids or whatever.
Two adults, two kids or like whatever, as long as there's at least one adult and you can have like three kids or whatever, it's like 27 quid, right? So say you're 27 quid just for the tickets and then, mate, like, see for a medium drink and a medium popcorn, it's like 13 quid.
Fuck me.
Do you know what I mean? So it's like, I don't blame people for no going to the cinema. It seems like this sort of buzz has, and you know, it's no available on Disney Plus, it's no available here, you need to go to the cinema today.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, ah, it's cool, it's like merry at like an event, but it's so expensive now. But I mean, I really enjoyed Barbie. I thought it was funny. I thought Ryan Gosling was fucking excellent in it.
Aye.
We'll not really go in too much. I mean, I'm sure we're going to talk about some of the commentary, but
oh, definitely.
Like, my own opinions about it. But I had a wee bit of, I was a bit wanky myself. But I sat down and sort of thought about it. And I was thinking about stuff like, I was like, this has been made for the generation of people that we're in,
right,
that are almost like trapped in, you know, like trapped in their sort of teenage years, like this sort of like millennial thing that's happening where people kind of get on the housing ladder, people kind of get like proper like fulfilling careers, and we're constantly like harping back when like nostalgia to like these sort of like toys.
Okay.
That was like one thing I sort of thought about is like, why has this been so fucking popular? The other thing that I thought is that it was so meta. Like they were kind of poking fun at it, but you're kind of like, you're poking fun at something that actually exists, where they were like, Barbie comes to the real world and she goes into the boardroom and she's like, where's the women? And they're like, there are no women in the boardroom. And they're like, you're kind of like, but that's real.
Yeah.
You're kind of like making a joke of something that Mattel have 100% been a part of.
Yeah.
And also like the whole sort of like, just the whole fact that just consumerism and like this whole sort of culture of like, you know, they were like at the end, they were flashing up all the different Barbies. And I was just sort of sitting thinking like, how, like, we're in a cost of living crisis and we're sort of like glorifying this thing that has just been total consumerism.
Oh,
and like, get the dress and get the house and get our bike. And you're just sort of like, I don't know, man.
I think it's like, even gone that way with the movie, because I think Mattel were using the movie almost as a kind of like test balloon to see, because again, they're not making the types of money that they once made off of dolls and houses and accessories and all these types of things. So like, how do we like further monetize our product?
Mm-hmm.
And now Barbie has shown that they can do that through mainstream cinema.
Uh-huh.
And again, you know, I think
they're talking about the Mattel universe.
Aye, this is the Mattel cinema. So another
MCU.
Except it's Mattel and no Marvel. Where is it, Polly Pocket or something like that? Sally or something like that? And it's the lassie for Emily in Paris is going to play it. And so they're now like lining up other Mattel kind of properties to then repeat, and it has kind of taken a level of the shine off for me, because as I say, when I was watching the trailers, I was like, again, this is just dripping in irony and sarcasm, and you know, it's very conscious of itself, it's definitely poking fun at itself. Like, but if it then spawns an actual cinematic juggernaut that is there to churn out money through cinema tickets, it kind of undercuts that sarcasm and that fun that it's poking at itself, because it is actually launching this potential behemoth on people that will inevitably, like Marvel, lead to the same type of fatigue that people will be like, you know, they'll get four or five down the line and be like, fuck, they're sick of this already. You know what I mean? Like, because that's just how it's going to go. You know what I mean? Like, but when it's saying that, I'm looking forward to going to see it. Maybe take the Wayne rather than Stacey, since, you know, she's not up for it.
On my, like, cynical point where I was talking about, like, are we, like, trapped in our childhoods? Are we, mm-hmm. know, like, are we refusing to grow up? I actually said to somebody about that, like, just, like, I was just having this thought about, like, I suppose there's a part of it is sort of like mine, you know, like coming into middle age and just sort of like gone like got my driving license recently. I think I've went through a lot of like, maybe it's time for me to grow up a wee bit, do you know what I mean? And, like, and I think I've projected that on it, because when I said that to them, they were like, well, you could look at it a different way. Are we the first generation of adults that it's actually okay to play? And like our parents, like, you know, my dad had, you know, when I think about it, he sat on the couch and he watched cowboy movies and he smoked fags, and it was like, he didn't have a lot of fun. You know, no. He maybe went and played a game of golf, but we are like, we are now...
Sat in the local a couple of nights a week.
Uh-huh. But we're talking about half mic, and, you know, we can edit this, but you recently got a PS5.
Aye.
The idea, and I've spoke about before, like, the sort of realisation that, fuck, I'm older than what I remember my dad, like, when I first remember my dad. The idea of my dad buying a games console back then and sitting down and actually, like, giving himself, like, headspace by getting into a flow state playing a game is just not in the cards. And when I sort of had that sort of cynical take of, like, man, we're trapped in our fucking teenage years, we're refusing to grow up, which is a kind of trope and a sort of, you know, like, you just need to grow up. I loved that when the guy said to me, actually, I think we're maybe the first generation, but it's all right to stay.
Yeah.
Have that connection to your childhood and actually still have fun and play, whereas the adults in the past had so much stress that they just could not just do was that, not you know?
Because I think, like, the comparison to my first ever console, PlayStation 1, I remember playing the old school polygonal, like, Final Fantasy 7, and my dad, who would have been probably in and around his 40s at that point, popping his head round the door with a meme, "You winning, son?" You know what I mean? Like, and you'd be like, "It's a 100-hour game, Dad." But I'm pretty much the new, all right, you know, go away. And he'd be like, "Right, no worries." And sometimes if you're playing a football game, come in and be like, sit on the edge of the bed and be like, "What's this?" And like try and show an interest. But you'd be like, "You want to go?" He'd be like, "No." I'm like, "No, you're all right. I'm just, you know, checking in, seeing what you're doing, trying to show an interest and whatever else it is." And then we go new to me, who's, again, in his early 40s, I'm passing my PlayStation 4 to my daughter, who's now, while I'm sitting now playing the Final Fantasy 7 remake 20 years later. And, you know, we're like sitting talking about Crash Bandicoot, and she's sitting playing Little Big Planet. I'm going, "There's a Little Big Planet sequel that you can get on this." And, you know, it has become something that we have in common. So it is, like, and again, it is probably because we have that permission to play, you know, whether it be, you know, comic books or whatever your thing is, whether it be, you know, collecting Barbies or Buzz Lightyears or whatever it is, like, we have a level of permission to do that type of thing that maybe previous generations didn't have. Like, it's probably a good point, I think, to be honest with you.
I think it's actually, like I said, I was like, fuck, do you know what, man? Maybe I am just adopting this, because I remember going to the football with my dad. Like, my dad didn't take me to Celtic games until I went to a few when I was really young. But then he made a conscious decision. No, do you know what? Like, I think my best mate was a Rangers supporter, and he was like, "Do you know what? Look, take him away for that." And then I went back as like a teenager. We got a season ticket, Hampden. And then it was the next season when we first went back to Celtic Park. I can remember my dad sitting going, "Look at the fucking state of these cunts that were stoning in tracksuits." Like, adult men in Celtic tops and tracksuits. And see, now I'm like, no, you know what? See, if you and the amount of people that I see where it's like, they're new, they went to school with us, and they're now gone down to the show, but it's getting delivered, and they're putting the taps on with their boys. And I'm like, they are. It's exactly what you just said. It's like you're creating memories and connections that you're actually the same as your parents. Whereas when I was like young, I looked at my dad and my mum really old,
yeah,
and totally disconnected for me in any way. And I think it created this sort of sense of like, they won't get my, do you know what I mean? And like, I can't go to them with the troubles or my problems as a teenager, because they won't get it. They're so like, their shit is nowhere near my shit. And I think it is a positive that you've got that connection with your daughter and she'll come to you with problems.
Even with like my nieces,
I mean,
and nephews, it's like they're all MCU daft. You know, when you watch the latest Captain America or whatever it happens to be, like, you know, my dad was not like, "We'll sit down and watch Superman," or, "Well, have you seen, you know, whatever, you know, I think that when I was growing up, there wasn't really a lot of like particularly good superhero movies. You know what I mean? It wasn't really a thing. You know what I mean?
Maybe the Batman movies.
Michael Keaton. That would have been like the genesis of like going to cinema for me. So I do intend to watch The Flash just purely for Michael Keaton, even though I've heard it's garbage. But
I really enjoyed it. Right. I really enjoyed The Flash. But one of Sharon's mates plays his body double. Like, see the bit where there's the two Flashes,
mm-hmm.
a guy that she went to stage school with. Is that guy?
Oh, right.
So she was like pure buzzing to watch it because her pal Eddie's in it, and because I watched that, I was like, you know, I had no expectation. I mean, I actually been like, this has got to be shite. Mm-hmm. So I came out of it being like, actually, it was all right, and seeing Michael Keaton and like an updated Batman suit and the old Batmobile, I was like, yes, man, like fucking yes. And
that was definitely where it started for me because I'm all the way gay for Batman. I love the Tim Burton. You know what I mean? Like, but in terms of the Barbie stuff, like. Let's say we touched on it, but the reaction to it, I know we're not covering what like, Newgrun here, but the Ben Shapiro one, fuck, I mean, this guy's level of like insecurity within himself is like terminal. Like, I mean, paid to go and see Barbie, then as I say, came out, went and then paid to buy Barbies to then record a 45-minute video of him then burning Barbies, and you're like, the fuck is wrong with you that you went to what is essentially a children's movie about a fucking plastic doll and you came out so angry that you had to set fire to something? Like, I mean, I get that, you know, these guys, a lot of it is performative, but I think we need to get to a point with something where like, right, that's fucking plenty. Uh-huh. Like, simmer down, you know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like, you can come out and be like, this movie promotes a matriarchy ahead of a patriarchy, and you're like, and what? It's a movie aimed at young girls, like lensed through, you know, a children's toy. Like, maybe you don't need to actually take it that seriously. Uh-huh. Maybe you just like chill out and maybe sit a couple out. You know what I mean? Like, do you need to be like, fist shaking, angry about? I think I seen like Whoopi Goldberg react to it, and she was just like. Like, what is wrong with you?
But that is the question. That is the best question for somebody like Ben Shapiro is, what is wrong with you? What is going on in your head, mate, that you feel the need? And I think there are quite a lot of performative people, you know, and I think, you know, I don't know if you've seen like Lawrence Fox on Father's Day, absolutely like stinking drunk, trying to set fire to an LGBTQ plus flag that was non-flammable due to EU regulations.
He went out in boat. He went out in boat to do that.
He was like, you can shove it up your ass, and you're just like, mate, like, you're the problem in the world. Like, you don't realise that you think you're the solution and you're actually the fucking problem, and he's a pure, she's turned against, the wind's against us, and the amount of
big
divorced
time. He has got the divorced energy
100%, and I think like I think quite a lot of it is performative, and he's trying to do it to, he's a failed actor, musician, and now he's trying to grift his way into politics
and broadcast as well.
Somebody like Shapiro, I think quite a lot of the anger's real.
Yes.
And it's quite like when you watch the movie, you're like, aye, it does. It actually kind of promotes, she comes back and kind of promotes egalitarianism.
Mm-hmm.
She's in Barbie World where, I mean, spoiler alert, right? She's in Barbie World where the women are all the leaders and Barbie's the ruler.
President
and,
Barbie, Dr.
Yep,
Barbie.
100%. Yep. And Ken's basically at the beach with his abs looking good and blah, blah, blah.
What's your job? My job is beach.
They come into the real world and she comes back and he's turned into a patriarchy. And actually at the end of the movie, the conclusion is we kind of need equality here. We need like egalitarianism. It's not going to work. And you're kind of like, right. But they missed that point. And even down to like a bunch of like incels on Reddit being like, I mean, Margot Robbie, she's mid.
I've seen that.
And you're like, guys, you are involuntary celibates because you are not clean enough, you know, good enough, or like attractive enough to attract a woman that you have involuntarily became celibate, and you're calling Margot Robbie mid.
Aye.
Like, if you could even take a sniff of her farts, mate, you would be like leveling up in your fucking life. It's so weird, like, to see this sort of like male fragility and anger turn around and go, that gorgeous woman's mid, and you're like,
she was picked to be the literal embodiment of unattainable beauty standards, which is something that obviously, you know, the Barbies have been accused of, with slim waists and long legs and blonde. And, you know, over the years, this has been like the kind of counter argument to why, you know, people want to play with them. All they, you know, they do all these horrible things. Like Margot Robbie was explicitly picked because she is the physical embodiment of that unattainable beauty standard. Like, she is, like, unarguably one of the most attractive women probably on the face of the planet. You know what I mean? Like, so I did see that one and laugh, especially when you see her coming in out of premieres and you're just like, I mean, are your eyes working? Like, just on a pure basic level, like, get that, you know, these incel communities have their own insecurities alongside these guys like Shapiro and whoever else it happens to be. But, you know, if your eyes work, that is a ridiculous statement. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't, I don't get it. But I...
Even just, I think, like, it sort of highlights the point is such a weird sort of, like... But yous are highlighting exactly what we're trying to say to yous, is that yous are reducing her down to what you see.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. You know, I suppose you could get into a sort of argument where she's playing Barbie. And you're like, right, okay, but yous are literally being like, what? So... if anybody's sort of gone, what does mid mean? Is this sort of term to say that she's a 5 out of 10?
Mm-hmm.
That's basically like she's mid-scale, or she's like, but you're literally just reducing a person down to that. This is what we're trying to get rid of. This is exactly why
she was picked. It was to bait that type of reaction, because uh-huh. The Lassie Gerwig, who has made this movie, is not stupid, like, clearly not. You know what I mean? Like, she has understood what she was aiming to do, and she clearly understood that there were a certain type of people who were going to have exactly these types of reactions to it. You know what I mean? Like, and I think, you know, it makes it a wee bit kind of like predictable in a sense. Like, guys like Shapiro and that now, like, they have set, you know, their agenda to be just against everything. Like, and this was one of these things that it's a mainstream thing. It's out there. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody's getting involved in it. So whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, they are against it because they are contrarians who are just against everything. You know what I mean? Like, I think I similar with these communities as well. To be part of those incel communities or those online communities that are having these types of conversations, to be in, you need to be against everything that's no in. And it's not just like an individual facet of your personality. It is your entire personality, your entire being, sort of thing. Like, but that type of shit, he's just like, it has get messages, it has got deliberate nods to things, and as you say, meta jokes and whatever else happens to be. But at the same time, why can it not just be like a funny movie that people enjoy? You know what I mean? Like, why do you have to then inject your hatred? And yeah, I don't know. It's a mentality that I don't really get. But we sit and talk a lot about a lot of stuff I've done over the years. Like, and there is things that, you know, at times I'm like, I fucking hate that. But like, I don't think I'd ever be at a stage where I let it define, like, my hatred or something, let, you know, me define who I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I think a lot of these communities and people have gone against them at the minute, is that they have become so, like, dug in to who they are, that they are now just straight up excluding anything that is not what is, you know, they immediately agree with. You know what I mean? Like, and I think that it's plain as day when you take, as I say, people bitching about kids' movies. I heard that last year, Kevin Smith, right, you know, the guy for Clerks and shit like that, did like a reboot of He-Man for Netflix. And it's just a fucking He-Man cartoon. But in it, the female characters are given more sort of prominent roles, more actual like storylines, and everybody just being like pure He-Man's awesome. Like, they all had their own sort of characters and essences that were true to what was originally in the He-Man, but still also kind of like true to like modern audiences.
Uh-huh.
And these people went after fucking nut about it, and you're just like, this is a children's cartoon. Can you just shut the fuck up?
You know what I mean? Aye, but this isn't the first that we're getting to this, because, I mean, you know, it's any time they change the skin colour of a character, it is like, you know, I remember somebody being like, I don't think it was actually about Little Mermaid. I can't remember. It was a Grimm's tale, though. And,
right.
You know,
so the new Snow White is Hispanic, isn't she?
Is that right? I don't know.
I think she's...
I have no idea about the new Snow White.
No.
So this was years ago.
Oh, right, this was a long time ago. I can't remember what it would have been, but it was like, you know, they were like, why? And they were going on about how the Grimm's tales came from like Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, really? That's really what you're going to hang your hat on? The people that wrote this story were white, therefore the characters should be. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, Jesus wasn't white, mate. Like, do you know what I mean? And like, let's go back and change that and like bring in.
Like Badil during the week with Oppenheimer, where he was like, and you touched on it earlier on by saying Oppenheimer was Jewish. Now, it turns out that like Oppenheimer had parents who were Jewish, but I don't think that he particularly practiced the faith for what I understand.
Right, aye. So it's the same as like us saying that we were
raised Catholic or whatever it is. I don't think it was like a defining factor of his personality, but again, I could be wrong. But this is the discourse that I picked up after the Badil article, because David Badil has somehow became the national policeman on anti-Semitism, being Jewish himself.
Well, he came out and spoke out against Corbyn.
Yeah.
So I think the Telegraph and all these will just be like, he's, you know, yes, brilliant.
An article to go and stir shit up. But it was like, Cillian Murphy played a Jew. Why did they not hire a Jew to play a Jew? And you're like, because the best actor who auditioned for it got it. Like, he has an existing relationship with the director. They've worked on multiple movies together. They know each other inside out. Like, he picked somebody who he thought was best for the role. And it's the same thing, like, you know, you're watching like a gay TV show, but it's like a straight actor or vice versa. Like, why do we not get a gay person in to play this gay character? And you're like, because there's this thing called acting where, you know, if you are the best person to embody that character for that piece, then what does it matter what your actual sexuality is? What does it matter what your actual skin colour is? Unless, like, somebody writing a civil rights movie, you know, the Nelson Mandela story, you're not going to cast him as like a white dude, right? There's the obvious shit that you just wouldn't do. But see, unless your story hinges on that element of somebody's personality, why the fuck would it matter? You know what I mean? Like, you know, as I said, Disney have been accused of a lot of shit, and they're now at the point where they are doing it deliberately because the backlash generates buzz for them.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Aye, publicity.
Some of the best things, and it's weird that we accuse the right of being engaged in this like culture war shit, like the Shapiros and the, you know, Petersons and whatever his name, Billy Piper's ex and all that other stuff. Like, but the big corporations are engaged in it as well. Like, you know, Disney pick a black Little Mermaid knowing that people are going to be like, she's a fucking black Little Mermaid. Like, that was, you know, for Copenhagen or the Grimm, you know, this is, you know, Bavarian, you know, deepest, darkest Germany. Like, these things didn't exist. And you're like, aye, but we're telling a modern version of the story. So, like, what's your problem?
Well,
you know what I mean? Like,
when I was talking to this guy years ago, I just remember he was like, I mean, why? And I was like, well, why no?
Aye.
And he was like, no, what? No, like, why are they doing it? And I was like, why no do it?
Aye, because...
Why no do it? And he was like,
living a diverse world now.
I don't like it. And that's when I was like, I don't think they give a fuck about what you like and what you don't like. Like,
no.
I think you're totally missing it. Like, it's like, getting back to what we were saying, like, totally projecting your own insecurities and fears onto this shit that they don't give a fuck about you, mate.
Aye.
Like, wake up to the fact that they don't care. Like,
aye,
they don't care what you think or feel, and you are wasting your energy. Like, and this particular person was like, you know, no offence to him, but he was a bit of a loser.
Aye.
And you're like, you're wasting your finite life energy that could go into like making things better for yourself.
Aye.
On the outrage that you feel about the fact that they've replaced the Little Mermaid with somebody that's black.
Aye.
And it is, well, just
the,
that
the seven dwarfs in the new Snow White and the seven dwarfs are not going to be dwarfs. They're like a pure ragtag bunch of, like, you know, eco hipsters or whatever the fuck it is, you know what I mean? Like, but I mean, that's like deliberately done. Like, Disney are basically like sitting there going, fuck you, like, because your outrage is the best advert that we could ever have for this shit.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like, because you're going to spend 20 hours a day online talking about this.
Uh-huh. The thing is, Disney already have changed things in the past. I saw a thing pop up on my phone, the 1938 animation of like the wolf blowing down the pigs' houses was a like he was disguised with a really obvious sectarian, essentially like a Jewish person portrayed as going around
right.
being this evil person blowing down houses, and then the 1945 reanimation was just the wolf doing it.
Right.
So I mean, nobody's complaining that the original story was somehow
discriminatory.
Because obviously you're correcting something, but then you're like, this is still that organization, by the way. Like, so I don't really know whose side that they want to sort of be on. Like, I mean, I hate Disney for many reasons, but like, I don't care about like why you would change these kind of
the corporations are the biggest grifters that ever existed, because it's popular, whatever's popular, they'll dare.
I think when we're on cinema and getting into it the way we have done, and talking about, you know, some of these like sort of culture war actors and stuff like that, probably like important to take a wee minute just to nod at the thing that I don't know if you heard about recently, The Sound of Freedom.
I have seen some stuff. I have seen people on social media asking how they get access to it.
To the cinema.
But
there's conspiracies. So there was like conspiracies that they're like going to the cinema, and then for some reason like that screen's not got electricity, it feels very like false narrative.
Anybody that's not aware, it Sound of Freedom is a movie with Jim Caviezel, who played Mel Gibson's Jesus, in interviews in reference to this movie, like actively referring to himself as Jesus, whilst simultaneously like referring to Donald Trump as Moses, as if he's some sort of prophet that's going to bring forth this. And it's like really like dripping in like QAnon language, right? And obviously, you know, the QAnon cult bullshit about how, you know, the left are stealing children and killing them and drinking their blood and stealing their adrenochrome and, you know, using it to like live longer and blah, blah, blah. And like, you're like, but like synthetic adrenochrome's a thing. Like, why would anybody need to do that? There is no difference. Like, if you needed adrenochrome, you could just like go to the chemist and like buy it. Like, there is no need to like sacrifice children or anything like that. You know what I mean? Like, but this is what this QAnon cult believe. So Caviezel has been hired as the lead actor in this Sound of Freedom, and on the surface the movie is about anti-child trafficking. So the story is the main guy goes to South America and kind of basically combats child trafficking in these South American states.
Okay.
And, you know, protects America and blah, blah, blah.
Is that a true story based on
guy, the guy who wrote and directed it, claims that it is based on aspects of his life, but this guy was also arrested 2 days ago for kidnapping a child. So, you know.
Okay, right. Okay.
So Caviezel's out there, and he's going to like QAnon like conferences and like speaking to people about like Hollywood kidnapping and murdering children and like harvesting their fucking brain glands whilst promoting this movie about anti-child trafficking, written, directed and funded by someone who is now an arrested child trafficker. So the whole thing's fucked up. The controversy in America, there was a couple instances, as you say, where people were posting TikToks in cinemas where the sound went off or the lighting wasn't working, and they were like, oh, they're trying to silence this. But the other one that was happening was that people were going into like empty cinemas and being like, I could only get one specific seat for this showing, and it was here. So I bought my ticket here and I've walked in, and it's like an empty cinema. And they're like, how can I only buy one ticket in an empty cinema? And it's because right-wing nutjobs were going online and buying multiple tickets
right,
to basically like promote the movie and then not going to. So they won't see it the first time, but when they were going to see the movie, instead of buying one ticket for themselves, they were buying 10 tickets.
Right.
So the three or four people that were there had bought out the entire cinema, and then we're like, how come this cinema's empty? And you're like, because you bought all the fucking tickets. Like,
right.
It's now made $137 million in the first couple of weeks, which is like
ridiculous
more than the Flash. Like, I mean, like, so, you know, this they have grifted the absolute shit out of this. It's now getting released in Europe, Britain, and over the course of like sort of August, September, and October, there's going to be like releases concurrent so that they can basically sweep across Europe with this message. But you know, the movie itself is not per se like a QAnon movie. It's been pitched very much as a QAnon movie. But what is actually happening is they're having an actual, and maybe it was intended as a good faith conversation for these guys like Caviezel or whatever it is. It's obviously subsequently found out they've been run by a guy who is doing the exact same thing that this movie is proclaiming to like protect people from. But this has been used as a way to get QAnon talking points. So, you know, not only are the right-wing nutters grifting after Ayn to, you know, sell multiple tickets, like they're using this, you know, as a sort of wedge to like take batshit crazy QAnon talking points into sort of mainstream conversations. Uh-huh. Well, you know what I mean?
Seen last week that one of the senators was campaigning for to get the Pizzagate investigation reopened. So it's
about children being abused in a basement that doesn't exist.
But the guy turned up with the AR-15 and found a broom cupboard and ended up in fucking jail himself. Do you know what I mean? And we had a conversation about that, and I think, like, you know, to go back and sort of conclude, we'd concluded that, you know, there are real people out there that have real anxieties about the safety of children, and they end up doing stuff like this, and they get sucked in by this sort of, like...
And let's be honest, nobody... no one is pro-child trafficking. Like, we're all anti-child trafficking, you know what I mean? Like, nobody wants this real issue to exist, but it is a real issue and it does exist. I just don't think the people having these conversations about it are the people to resolve it.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like, especially as you were saying, people take it to heart and they do some pretty fucked up shit because they believe that they're protecting children.
Or worse, vote for fucked up people and ending up with people and, you know, like thinking that these people are, like you're saying, they're here to do this thing. Like Donald Trump, like we've spoke about it so many times, but you just isolate incidents. You know, there's videos of Trump sitting picking out young women with Epstein. There's a story about Donald Trump knowing that a modeling agent was a fucking convicted paedophile and gave his daughter, like his teenage daughter, to him to become his agent. Like, I don't think that this guy is the guy that's...
6 weeks ago been found criminally liable for rape. You know what I mean?
I just don't think that this guy is the guy to be... And it's like you're saying, like, these issues are real. Nobody is like, nah, just let it happen if it's happening. But they are creating stories that just are nonsense to stir up emotions in people to try and, you know, I don't know, like, pull the levers of power to gain power themselves.
And as I say, in this instance, to get, you know, batshit crazy talking points about, you know, people drinking the blood of children. And it's ironic that the people who want to further these QAnon talking points, who claim to be about the protection of children, have just given £137 million to a guy who has been arrested for child trafficking and kidnapping. You know what I mean? Like, the very thing that they wanted to defend against has been the thing that they have now facilitated. You know what I mean?
It's kind of like... it's like fucking Ali G, right? It's like it's almost like when a joke turns on itself.
Yeah.
When it becomes, like, so satirical. You're like, what is actually going on here? Like, you kind of lose track of who's actually the butt of this joke in the end. You're like, this is it. It becomes so confused and so diluted, though. The actual issue becomes so diluted with, like, all this nonsense that the actual thing still exists. And you kind of like, well,
what has the movie done to actually protect children from child trafficking?
Exactly.
Nothing. It has put £137 million or dollars into the pocket of a guy who kidnaps children.
It's like,
you know what I mean? Like,
Who are we talking about?
I mean, Trump? Maybe we should watch.
No, the guy who funded the movie, Sound of Freedom.
I mean,
reviews are a bit like mediocre. Nobody's saying it's terrible. Nobody's saying it's brilliant. You know what I mean?
Like, I mean, I wouldn't be adverse to sitting down and watching it, but I would be very conscious of, like, how emotionally invested in the story that I'm considering that none of it has been verified.
The movie itself is not promoting
a true
QAnon talking points. Right. It's a very self-contained about this guy going to South America trying to stop child trafficking. But what they're doing is using the press tour and the media interest off the back of the film to then have
kind of
public conversations about QAnon.
Earth, where it was seen as like, this is not the story of Scientology. We are not saying that, But in every single press conference, Travolta was talking about Scientology. Yes. It was seen as a vehicle to promote their religion while keeping the movie completely disconnected for it by going like, oh, no, this isn't the movie. But then,
like, really obscure, niche, like, batshit talking points into, like, mainstream conversations.
So what talking points are they bringing in? Other than, like, the satanic cult? Because that's the talking point.
Caviezel, who, you know, was, at least up until, I don't know how long ago, like, considered a, like, legit actor, you know what I mean? Like, is out here, there and everywhere, like, full-blown, like, QAnon nonsense at press conferences, news media, like, conference centres. You get him.
Maybe he's just a method actor because he's like playing the part of this nutter. He's actually like, all right, okay, I'm going to go and do what all those guys.
He's certainly a method actor because he was still referring to himself as Jesus.
Jesus.
He was in an interview with, I think it was one of Trump's lawyers that was in the studio with him. And he was talking to one of these guys on like Fox News or whatever it is. And he was like, oh, I'm still Jesus, but like Trump is Moses. And I'm like, you played Jesus like, what, 15 years ago? Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Like, maybe you're male, still point. Holding on to it, you know what I mean? Like, so I, maybe he is just method. He's now like Jesus who saves children from sex trafficking, like, which is something you'd imagine Jesus would actually do if he was real, you know what I mean? Like, but this guy's unhinged. Let's see if you want, and I mean, I'll maybe try and like find some clips to drop in on the edit or something like that, but like, this is like, you're looking at this guy and you're like, you are unwell. Like, you are obviously like unwell.
But people were literally saying that about Joaquin Phoenix when he was doing one of his roles, and like he was like seen in public, and they were.
Just when he was starting a rap career.
Oh yeah,
turned out he was like trolling everybody.
He was just basically doing. I imagine like Jim Carrey playing Andy Thingy would have been very similar, and you're like, right, okay, well.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that this is the same case.
No, I get
it. But
you.
It would be pretty funny, wouldn't it?
He doesn't actually believe he's physical and body like Jesus.
Wins an Oscar, but, like, comes out and he's like, I'm Jesus QAnon.
QAnon Jesus. But it's pretty fucked up. So it's one of the moments where like it has garnered all this attention and done almost the exact opposite of what it was intended to do, whilst also just spreading shitty conspiracy theory bullshit
just
everywhere.
Weird
like
shit.
Pure power washer, just QAnon everywhere, you know what I mean? Like, so I definitely probably will sit and watch it at some point. It has popped up on the dodgy apps and stuff like that, but I've also been like super conscious of it. Uh-huh. And like, this isn't for me, but at the same time, I think it might be interesting to see what people in that headspace.
I think you have to.
Thinking.
I think if we're going to sit and commentate on it, I think you kind of have to.
Yeah.
Like, with the understanding of where it comes
definitely.
From and whatever. But then, to be fair, I don't really look into, like, where everyone else's motivations comes from every other film that I watch.
I was spending 20 minutes talking about Barbie and me and you have not seen it. You know what I mean?
I suppose we only really... You'd only look at Christopher Nolan's political interests if he started
making political movies
about politics and like
I
they did that with
Oppenheimer
Oliver.
And Dunkirk have elements there.
I suppose everybody's looked into Oliver Stone's political motives over the years and
but has untold history or whatever it was overtly political. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Absolutely. And he's a you know he's best pals with Putin. You know, sat across from.
I think as well. Like we'll just. You know, round up on cinema since we've like been here all day. Obviously, there's the writer's strike, and you know, you were talking about the Flash. Do you know there was a guy who plays a televised version of the Flash, who was like doing an interview, and they were like, "Oh, congratulations on your cameo in the Flash movie," and the guy was like, "What are you talking about? I'm not in the Flash movie," and they're like, "No, like." You're in the Flash movie? And he's like, nah, it was somebody else playing like a different version of the character or whatever it was. And it turns out, no, this guy was like actually in the Flash movie. And they went, like, and it's like, again, what a lot of this writer's strike that is about the AI-ification. Like, I don't know if that's a word, but maybe we just invented one. like cinema, you know, like I'd seen people talking about the writer's strike saying that, you know, the studios are going to AI and being like, writers, a season of X-Men or The Witcher or whatever the fuck it is, and it's coming back with broad strokes, and then they're hiring actual writers to come in and be like, right, tidy this up and like put it in the format that you know we want it in. And writers are like, well, hold on a minute, like, why don't we just write it from scratch? And they're like, no, we don't want that because we'd need to pay you. Like, Secret Invasion, the one with Samuel L. Jackson, got a lot of stick because the opening sequence was done with AI.
Right.
So it was, and it's really fucking shady AI. It just looked horrible. Like, there were meant to be, like, representations of Samuel L. Jackson's face and, like, other bits and pieces, you know, I'm assuming, like, pop up throughout the show and stuff like that, but it just looked muddy, horrible, like, overly stylized, but, like, just one look at it and you're like, that's AI. You know what I mean? Like, so they're bringing it into the script writing, they're bringing it into, you know, the credit sequences and the CGI. They're introducing people to movies. I mean, was it you were saying, like, Christopher Reeves?
So, like, there's a scene in The Flash where they go through all the multiple Supermans.
Aye.
And you see the guy for the 50s, and then it comes forward to Christopher Reeves, and then, you know, whatever.
That's like, creepy as fuck.
Although, I don't know if Dean Cain, wonder why he was left out, like, the Clark and Lois TV series, because, I mean, for me personally, I loved that.
He was Superman
for a period of time.
Christopher Reeves, when we were younger, I think he was kind of like at the end of the run. I think, I don't remember Superman 4 at all. Like, so
do you know?
No, nah, not really.
No, I remember going to see it. I went to see it in the Canon Cinema Theatre on that is now the Classic Grand.
All right.
What is it? Nuclear Man. Like, right. Like fucking Lex Luthor fires a nuclear weapon into the sun and creates Nuclear Man, and he comes to Earth, and he's like really powerful and that's blah, blah, blah.
Obviously why it fell away from there.
Oh, it's terrible.
For me,
it's terrible.
Remember on a Saturday night, sitting down at home, Saturday night you used to have like boxing on the telly, and we would watch The New Adventures of Superman with Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher?
Hatcher, right.
Very close to the
and then
the novel
Pratchett. That's where I get confused. You'd watch Superman. My man and dad would order pakora for like the Indian, and then we'd sit and watch like, you know, Eubank versus Ben or whatever the boxing was that was on a Saturday night, and that was our like wee family sort of Saturday ritual. So for me, like, Dean Cain was probably more Superman to me than
Christopher Reeves was.
You know what I mean? Like, no, Henry Cavill's a pretty definitive version of it, I think, to be honest with you. But I growing up, like, I would have said, if you were like, who's like your Superman, I'd have probably went Dean Cain. So it's a bit weird that he's known it, but even the
I don't know,
even the guy for the '50s, like, that story, his story got dark as fuck. Like, that was a tragedy. So he, like, bring that guy back, using the AI to bring that guy back for the dead for a movie cameo, just doesn't seem appropriate to me. It doesn't seem fair. Same with Christopher Reeves. I mean, like,
I've been saying this for a while because I've seen adverts pop up with fucking Albert Einstein selling insurance and stuff.
Right.
And I'm like, really? Like, really? That, like, I was like, is that just because it's like over 50, like, you know, the whole like copyright thing?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, now your image rights are gone because you're
maybe
over 50 years. A bit like music, you know, you can use any music over 50 years. It becomes old, trad. Whatever it is. Yeah, it becomes public. But I was like, yeah, but you're using this for, like, you've got Albert Einstein, an animated version of him, fair enough, jumping around in bubble baths and stuff like that, and I'm like, I just don't really, like, I get it, they're trying to, like, but
it's very distasteful,
but I don't get
it,
but it's just very, like, who signs off on this shit? Like, who's actually, like, making a conscious decision that that's the right thing, you know? Like,
I don't think they're concerned about whether it's right or not, because, as I say,
no,
for me, bringing people back for the dead for the purposes of movie cameos is not like an appropriate use of technology. And I can get why writers and the people who have spent years building names in the cinema and sort of TV industries are like, no, fuck this, because they are being sidelined en masse at a time when, you know, for the first time in years, we're actually like talking about cinema, you know what I mean? And being like, it's became exciting again in the last few weeks, but at the same time, on the flip side of it, we have hundreds of thousands. They were saying that, like, you know, the big guys, you know, the Brian Cranstons and the Gail Gaddos and, you know, all these Henry Cavills and blah, blah, blah. They're millionaires. Cool. No doubt. But something like 95% of the TV and cinema industry are on less than £26,000 a year. You know what I mean? Like, and you're like, think about, you know, there was people showing like residuals for like streaming content, and like one of them was like, it was a, she had done like Mouseketeer shit, had been like a Disney princess, you know, on one of the channels, you know, Nickelodeon or whatever it was, and, you know, grown up in like a Disney Channel TV show, and had then moved on, you know, whatever she did with her life, and was like, here are my residuals, and it's like, she's getting checks in the post for like $2 and like $4, and like one guy was like, I got a check, it was like the Miley Cyrus one, was it Hannah Montana? Mm-hmm. One of the guys who was in like Hannah Montana was like, here's my latest residual check, $0, like sending me like no money. And you're like, this is still to this day.
That like, cost them money.
It cost them money to send you a check for nothing.
But we're also going down the route of like you're getting to the point where you could have a data bank of actors that have signed up to these contracts.
Yep.
And essentially, like, those studios will own those actors' rights forever or for whatever it looks like. And then they won't need to, like, they will be able to use, like, Robert Downey Jr. until, like, he's dead for 50 years and they're just using that image, right? And then there'll be a change where they can use, like, his image but slightly altered or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like, well, he could have been bigger. He could have been thinner. He could have been more... So then you create avatars for everything. And you're right, it just totally muddies the water. And it means that it detracts from and dilutes individual talent because rather than...
Is talent anymore when you just...
Well, that's it. But you look at like Oppenheimer and Cillian Murphy, and he's picked for that because he's an incredible actor.
Yep.
Christian Bale, like, there's loads of brilliant actors out there. But those people, if they're like, and Cillian Murphy's very aware of the social, like, he doesn't do social media, he doesn't touch any of that.
Somebody was talking
he's very
to him
removed
about
from it.
Peaky Blinder memes, and he was like, what's a meme?
Yeah, what's a meme?
And they were like,
and
you,
I love that.
What do you mean?
But that is what people love about him.
Wouldn't it be nicer?
But that's where
it's just
that's
like
where it'll go.
Chronically offline instead of chronically online. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, I think, but I get what you're saying, mate, because I'm pretty sure as part of all this writer strike stuff, people were saying that they were coming in and doing like motion capture, you know, for like special effects shit and all the rest of it. And one of the actors had said, well, hold on a minute, like, why am I doing this? Because this doesn't feel, like, relevant to, like, the project that we're working on. Why am I... And they're like, oh, no, we're just capturing your motion. And she's like, but why? And I'm like, well, because we'll store it away until whenever it is that we need it. And they're starting to now insert, like, clauses in actors' contracts that are like, we can basically, like, take your image and just apply it to something else.
Which is what we talked about with the music industry did it like many years ago, where they would sign artists up and then essentially they're tied in for like 7-album deal and they can't get out of these things. And I mean, you've got instances where you've got like Taylor Swift, who's like gone and like basically re-recorded all of her first like 4 albums, whatever it is.
Right.
And because she can't own the rights to them, but she's got out the agreement and now she's like basically re-recorded them and re-uploaded them so people then listen to her versions
rather than the other versions.
Right. I'd heard that there was some getting like, re-released.
But it's the same thing that's going to happen over.
Because I'm going to be honest with you, as a 40-year-old, 41-year-old white guy from Scotland, like, I kind of missed like Taylor Swift becoming like the biggest thing on the face of the planet.
Oh, it's and literally like, see you're talking about earlier on about like the incels, where it's like their whole personality, mate. There is like predominantly white, approaching middle-aged single women who their full personality is
just
they are
goddess.
Taylor Swift's fan.
Aye. And don't get me wrong, like fair fucks to the lassie, like you know, the Era tour that she's on just now looks incredible, like, and she's like filling out like football stadiums like 6 nights a week, awkward. And you're like, when did that? And I mean, I knew she was always big, right? I knew she was like up there as like one of the main American recording artists and stuff like that. But I didn't realize that she was like Beatles big, like, honestly, didn't he? And like,
she's huge.
The actual like ridiculous love and like is fanatical. I had that guy on Twitter who, or X as it is now, because I billionaires or whatever, you know what I mean, as we were talking the other week,
the everything app, you know. Oh, we hate China.
This guy is like a legal professional.
We're just going to turn fucking Twitter into like the Chinese fucking government app. It's like,
we've obviously I briefly worked in like the legal industry a few years ago, and I've got, you know, folk on my Twitter from that sort of neck of the woods and bits and pieces. This guy's quite a serious guy who regularly, when there's like news shit, talks about like the legal element of what's going on in the news, and I find his chat quite interesting. And on the day that the Taylor Swift tickets went live in the UK, he was posting like, I'm on the phone shaking trying to get like Taylor Swift tickets. And I'm like, I think that's when I was like, fuck man, this lassie's ascended to a stratosphere that like Beyonce is on a world tour and people are like, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, like Taylor Swift's where it's at sort of thing. So I, just as an aside, but when you mentioned her there, like, she's you were become about huge.
There, Shep, like her re-recording, like I can't remember who it was, but I've got a feeling it was Cardi B.
Right.
Who, she went in direct competition with a record label and was asking fans to go and stream a song on SoundCloud, not on Spotify or Apple Music, because she get 100% of the revenue of the SoundCloud streams. So this is like, people taking the power, like try to take the power back.
Smart.
But
exactly.
You're talking about like the comparisons to the music industry. I'd be really interested in this. I was thinking there as you were talking. We've seen guys like David Guetta. We've seen like this, Calvin Harris is kind of like in the same sort of thing. These guys would have been producers back in the day.
Yep.
But because now the tech means that they don't need the band and they don't need the singers, the people that are, you know, like what you would probably say is naturally talented rather than somebody who develops like the ability to play a keyboard, whatever, like it, they become the stars. I would be very interested if we're going to see somebody like James Cameron, AI's face onto like Arnold Schwarzenegger's body. Like, is the human ego that way where like the CEO of Disney's like, I want to be the leading man in the next action movie, so go and motion capture my face and get me on this supermodel, like this jack like, guy's body.
An AI version of the Michael Flatley movie Blackbird. Have you ever seen this?
No.
Right, so Michael Lord of the Dance, you know, the fucking,
I know Michael Flatley, right? Dancing,
so he has made fucking millions, right? Aye. He went to like Broadway and was there for like fucking 15 years. Like, this guy is minted, and he's taking that money and he's basically made a James Bond movie where he is James Bond. So his Blackbird, look it up on YouTube, the reviews are terrible,
right?
And like, he is the least convincing actor I've ever seen in my life, and he's always got the white tuxes and the black bow ties, and he's like getting women chat, and there's like fucking dodgy sex scenes and action. Oh my god. And
was
this
it made
is like
in the '90s when he was fame?
In the last couple of years.
Oh right.
Like, he's an old man in it.
Right.
He's not even like
okay.
In his physical, because like in his physical prime, like, you know what I mean? This guy was svelte, you know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like, this dude is not at that anymore. Like, he is an old man who has probably not river danced in several years, cutting about kidding on his James Bond. So we already kinda have those vanity projects in certain respects, you know what I mean? But now you can just be like,
but all of these billionaire projects are vanity projects.
Then this is the problem, is that you don't need to be a billionaire
Titanic
now.
Is a vanity project. Aye, but they don't, the fucking moon is a,
they don't need it now, because if AI continues on the path that it's on and keeps encroaching on the things within the movie, TV and sort of music industry that we're talking about, like, you on your laptop in the house could create what would have been a $300 million movie
with
all your favourite actors, and you've just paid for the rights. You've
exactly.
Subscribed to Paramount's database,
exactly.
Pay a tenner a month and you can download the image of any actor you want to just superimpose in your movie.
There,
you know,
and ironically, because we were talking about it earlier again, we were talking about the fact that like Metallica got the taken out of them for standing up against this many years ago, saying that it was going to be going across the
industry. I mean, South Park spanked the living shit out of them for that.
When
you
said about
what?
South Park, that's the funniest thing, because there's already a website out where they have taken South Park,
yep,
and you can click on, pick five characters, put in a topic, and it will create you a full episode, and it is hilarious because it's the easiest thing to do in AI, because that's how they make the episode
and
week
it's dick
on
and
week.
Fart jokes as well.
It's just, yeah, and it just literally writes the whole episode. That is going to be like standard. And then you'll just be able to post up onto your feed, oh, this is my, I got a really good episode here. Watch no, this. Yeah. And it just makes the whole thing redundant as fuck.
I mean, we looked at it, didn't we? I mean, when we were, when ChatGPT or whatever the fuck it is became a thing, we had the conversation where we were like,
well, it was like,
why
what,
don't
what,
we...
What can we write? What can we ask it?
What can we... We were like, what kind of episodes, ideas would it give us? And I think there was like, you ran it twice, didn't you? There was like two lists of 10. And in each list of 10...
It was a
just,
couple.
Just
a
based couple. On what was it? It was just based on were episode it, titles
you
or
just,
something.
No, I just put in like ideas for an episode of Rebel City Podcast. So the AI already has pretty much everything fed into it through Google and YouTube and Spotify. So they know what you're. They
I think
know.
There was like three or four in each list where we were like,
it's all right.
That might actually be all right. You know what I mean? Like, we never went with any of them, obviously. You know what I mean? Like,
this is the other thing. Like, I had a guy in here a couple of weeks ago, and well, I think we're well past hour, so we can like wrap on this, yep. I suppose. And, you know, the delusion was wild, right? And so I just kind of like said something and then kind of like retracted as I realised that I was basically like stealing the jam out of this guy's donut. I won't name his name, I won't name his social media, but he was a professional copywriter, and I was just like, mate, find a new job.
It's over.
And he was like, what? And I was like, I know somebody who was a graphic designer who lost her job to Canva, and she was working at like Top Makeup, Maybelline, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
Canva has just, it's all automated and blah, 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 and they've got templates, and they can pay an intern to jump in and make professional graphic design. Same way, music, same. I was like, AI... The copywriting is the first thing, and now you're seeing it. Like, people can write, it can write social media posts for businesses.
My company works within the legal sector, employment law sector. Like, trust me, like, AI is going to have huge effects in the legal sector.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because, first off, you're paying hundreds of quid an hour to a lawyer, whereas you'll be able to go online and get letters drawn up in a second that mm-hmm. are... as well
immaculate
as well worded. At the moment, the way that companies will be introducing it is like having it write it and then having it sense checked, which is fine.
Yeah,
but this is exact same as what we're talking about with the actors, but isn't it? It's like the writers. They're now instead
rubbish.
Of yeah,
like that intro for your thing looked rubbish this time round. See that next time, and the next time it'll just
aye,
get better.
Iteration will make it better.
I mean, no, but I'm talking about more like the writers. Like,
yeah.
They're no longer hiring TV writers.
Oh, what he's saying is it'll
six months to write a full thing. They are now running it through an AI, and it's getting shipped to them to do a week's worth or a day's worth of work. Same thing with the copywriter. They'll know instead of hiring you to do this job where you could go, that took me an hour to write that copy and I'm £100 an hour, they're now going to be like, oh, we want you to edit what the AI's done. That should take you 5 minutes. We're not paying you £100 an hour, we're paying you a fiver.
Aye.
Do you know what I mean? And like, that's
the benefit. But the benefit, like, well, if we were, like, because this, like you say, it's an unstoppable thing. Like, this isn't, we're not going to be going, oh, actually, let's not do this and keep it all the same. But what will have to happen, and it kind of goes down the route of universal credit and all these kind of things, is, yeah, you are going to have to work for that 1 hour instead of 1 month, but you're going to get paid two grand to do that. So like that'll, and then it'll be a change of society. Like, you're not going to be having to, mm-hmm. like, we've already proved it with a 4-day working week. We've already proved it by working at home. We've already proved it. Like, these ways and these systems are old, outdated, and we will have to adapt.
Yeah.
And it'll be more that we'll have, like, so much more time to do things that we actually should be doing.
It'll take away GPs, service industry, everything like that will go, because, like, mate, I went to a GP circa 2017, and I was like, what are they doing? And they were putting my symptoms into an NHS database, and it was spitting out results. So you're like, they're using, that's not technically AI, but as a form
chart.
Of it.
It's just a flowchart that they use. They, if you phone up 111, they go, right, you got a high temperature, right? And yes, no, let's go down to the next part.
And decision tree.
And okay, right, we're going down to the nurse. Aye. Oh no, we're going to the doctor. It's the same.
I had a conversation with a guy, and it's became what he said was untrue, where he was like sitting in a Zoom call and he was like, you know, like, there's training to become a therapist, like, you know, this is one of the industries that's kind of like technology
depend.
Like the opposite, like basically like Teflon.
Oh yeah.
To like technology because the human connection.
You'll always
need it. Nonsense, mate.
No.
They have now get this app that is now rated at like something like 90% better than a face-to-face human therapist, and it is an AI therapist.
I'm sure Dan for Brothers and Arms was coming in talking to us about that years ago.
Yeah, chatbot and blah, blah, blah. But it is new. They've paid, again, it's like this sort of like, they've paid for the license to get access to the material of the world's greatest therapists and now feeding it into an AI. And it's like you're getting to go and speak to these people that are charging. I mean, I'd heard, I don't know how true this is, but I'd heard that Marissa Pierce was Ricky Gervais and Will Smith's psychotherapist. She was charging $4,000 an hour. So she's now out of a job.
Aye.
Because she has put all her shit on the internet and went, you can train under me and then you pay and I'll give you all the resources. But now they're paying for that $100 license, taking all that resource, feeding into an AI. Then, now the AI's talking in her accent and blah, blah, blah. So you fucked it, like, you know what I mean?
But this AI is not just, it's not just her. It's also read everything by Jung, everything by Freud, everything. Aye. So it's like, it should be better in some respects in that regard.
Still a little, isn't it?
And it's the same with, like, even my job, man. Like, I mean, I do a sales job.
Gone, mate.
And I've already heard, like, an automated script, and it sounds just like a person, but he's asking the right questions, great timing, great, all those things, and you're like, okay, like, I mean,
I think we're still at the point where it's
still gaps, but
aye, because let's say, let the Secret Invasion intro, the other one that gets me, and you can still tell nowadays, is like the YouTube adverts, where it's pure, this drone was created to, and like,
pure genetic
in a couple of years' time, as you say, it's going to get to a point with more and more iterations, more and more information, that we're going to see adverts, we're going to see movies, we're going to hear music that we're like, is that real?
There's already some great, you know, I've, what I mean, heard, like, I've heard Johnny Cash doing a cover of Barbie Girl or something like that. And it sounded great.
Liam Gallagher's High Flying Birds, where they fed Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds songs in AI and put it, and it came out going, this is what Liam would sound like singing this track. And
fucking hell.
So it's getting that point where you're like, that's class. And then you're like, no, but wait a minute, is it? And blah, blah, blah. But see, like,
it is for the consumer.
It's
class
that,
for the consumer.
That is where we're, I think that, see, like you said, that's where we're heading. We're heading to a point where all that will be left will be consumerism and just to consume. And even the arts, you know, are now gone, AI art, you know, like, and it's just...
There's a whole computer game, High on Life, which is like this same creators as Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
And so they've got the voice actors and all that that are involved, but large parts of that game were just AI generated. And I've played it, and it, like, obviously you can't tell when, because it's a game, but it, like, it looked great.
Yeah.
Like, looks absolutely great, but like, they're essentially cutting down all those graphic designers because they don't need to be like all the background art in games and stuff like
procedural
that.
The procedural generation and gaming, like Starfield and stuff like that, are going to be, you kind of create an interactable universe in all its detail, like,
manually
ahead of time. You need to, needs to be a bigger, because game worlds are getting bigger and bigger to the point where we're now literally like real time traveling across universes.
Well,
you know what I mean?
We've had what's it called for a while.
I watched a YouTube channel or a YouTube video with a guy that plays guitar for Justin Bieber, and he's like, I can't sustain. And you're like, come on, too fuck. He can't sustain his lifestyle just playing guitar for Justin Bieber.
Oh,
you're like, wow.
Man.
So he writes music for video games, and he's like, and I no longer have that because now they're using AI to write all the music for video games, because it doesn't need that. People are like, it lacks that human emotion. Aye, but the TV music, game music, elevator music, it has no emotion. So it doesn't need that, and it'll just, and it's background.
Yeah.
So it doesn't need that sort of human element and that human touch that people are saying will be missing. But actually, like you're saying, we're a ball head away from it having that and being like, we kind of distinguish the difference between what we do and see when that happens. Like, this is where, who knows where it'll go, but this is where the political choices will need to change, I think.
Aye, like these writer strikes and stuff like that are now vital, because they're the kind of, like, front line almost at the minute, like, keeping, you know, art almost human, you know what I mean? And, you know,
I think they're fighting the wrong battle, because it's like we were just saying now, there is no stopping this. So that political momentum, but that political momentum and that political will, and the will of people needs to come towards, what do we do with these people that now don't have a job because AI is going to take it, rather than them fighting to stop the juggernaut and its tracks? Because if we just look at recent history, it won't. There's nothing stopping automation. They went out and they striked against the factories becoming automated. Yeah.
It'll be exactly the same result.
The political will needs to change. It will be the exact same result,
and that is rebranding. Rebranding. This is organic content. This is organic.
Aye. Now we're seeing, but you know,
but it costs you 50
we're seeing
quid
people
extra.
Being reduced down to this whole, like, you know, Instagram's just awash with it, you know, like being reduced down to, like, here's what I do and I can teach you how to do it. And it's like, you're in a pyramid and you're getting the last of the profit that is left of that. And this sort of, like, coaching sort of lifestyle shit that's starting to, is really at its, I think it's at its sort of peak.
I think so as well. I think people are becoming more and more conscious of, like, and I think it's their own awareness, the fact that so much of this is, like, already out there. You know what I mean? Like, but I think it definitely is at its peak, that sort of self-help guru type thing. You know what I mean? I think what you're going to be left with is, like, the people who are extremely good at it and everybody else just kind of sort of falling by the wayside, and maybe other people actually just using these new tools to, like, direct their life.
That's what I was going to say. Like,
there's also a whole load of people that, like, learning styles and things like that, like, doing it off of a computer and doing it that way just doesn't work for them. Like, mm-hmm. they can't engage with that. Like in a therapist setting, like, some people will be better off sat across from someone because they're not going to listen. Because these are the same people that have listened to 1,000 motivational speeches online. It's not like they've fucking turned their life around or anything.
Yeah.
So, like, sometimes it there's always going to be a need for that human, but I think that the problem is that it could dilute it so much because there are always going to be cheaper alternatives that are readily available. So it'll be interesting, but there'll be new jobs created out of it all. Like, basically, there's going to be server maintenance people.
But that's kind of like you're saying, that's a dilution of the thing, though, because we've went for, you know, like, when I first started in Virgin Megastore back in the day, there was 100 staff. God knows how many people used to work in that Asda down at the Forge, and now that you're saying there's like 10 of them. So where has that other 190 people went? Like, they are now scratching their arse for work or driving Uber, and then that'll go.
And then it's universal credit.
It'll be universal basic income, and it'll be, you know, well, we hope they don't just let every cunt just go into a scrap heap, you know? Like, this is what I'm saying, like, that sort of swathe and will for people needs to be less about, you know, I think, you know, fighting to keep the status quo, but we need to keep these jobs, and more towards, like, what is an actual, a tangible solution to a problem, rather than trying to, like...
Yeah.
Put a fucking cage around technology when there's just absolutely no cage in it.
It shouldn't be either or. We need to find a place where these things exist in harmony. And as I say, the AI and the various bits and bobs, the technology that come alongside it, are tools that we harness to improve the quality of our lives. And, you know, what do we do in a world where jobs are not what they used to be? Like, how do we still maintain those quality of lives? Maybe we use AI to answer those questions, I don't know. But as I say, you know, we've been on cinema all the way through. I just thought it was interesting to, like, and we've touched on AI a number of times as well, but, like, just to actually, like, there's a real world sort of tangible consequence to, like, a lot of, you know, we have a lot of affection and nostalgia for all these franchises that we spoke about when we started speaking about Barbie and through, you know what I mean, like, these are things that we care about. You know, you see the backlash for Witcher and people getting tired out by Marvel. And, you know, like, we are emotionally engaged with these things. So I think it is quite important to be like, well, what is the future of the industry? And what do we need to know for the people that are, like... To me, that figure, that 95% of the industry is only less than £26,000 a year, to me was like... Pfft, staggering because the amount of, you know, the guy who's at the head of Disney earns like whatever it is, fucking $4 million a year, $400 million, I don't know what it is. I mean, but the figures that these guys at the very top who are bringing in and exploiting these tools and these technologies, like, they're not losing any money. And I think that's probably where we need to have the main conversation, is that, right, you have been able to use the market to dictate the terms of your employment to your benefit, cool, but you are now at the point where you are about to tank your entire industry. Like, there needs to be like a rebalance, because we all care about the actors, we all have fan favourites, we all have franchises that we care about. And as I say, we all have an interest in where these technologies are going as well, because this, like the music thing, kind of feels like the beginning. You know what I mean? We've spoke about it as being something that's coming, something that's coming, something that's coming. It now kind of, to me, feels real that this technology is about to, like, change the entire world. And, like, I think we need to have a proper conversation about how we harness it rather than how we either surrender to it or destroy it.
I think we also recognise that the film industry that we're talking about and the media industry, it's also a reflection on a lot of other industries and how the AI is going to influence
them. Yeah, exactly.
And really it's about the influence of the trickle-down of the money at that, because we know that these industries, the amount of billions and billions that go into it, and the problem's always been that top 5% holding on to all that wealth. Does this exacerbate that because you're putting the power, and it means that there's even less need to trickle it down?
Yeah.
Because any business, we've all been made redundant, probably. I don't know if you have actually, Paul. But we've been made redundant. Yeah, we've all been made redundant from a job, which is something probably quite unique from our generation. Like, I think that between us, I would say all of our friends have been made redundant from a job at least once.
Aye. Well, parents had jobs for life. I've been made redundant like 3 times.
Exactly, right. Right. So I think that, like, it's about finding people a space into the, not just the workforce, but like a purpose in fucking life. It doesn't have to be a place in a workforce. Maybe that's where our changing needs to change. And it's about finding a new purpose for people.
And we will wrap on this eventually. I genuinely think it comes into building the communities. We need to get back to people actually having active roles in communities and having some sort of, like, I think that's where the humanity comes into it. Mm-hmm. We can let the consumerism be AI-led and blah, blah, blah. Isn't it the fucking be-all and end-all? Like, we take care of each other, we have roles within our communities, and I think that is where, hopefully, we get that trickle down with the universal basic income, and it allows people to, relieves people of the stress of, like, housing and bill paying and blah, 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 and that's all taken care of, but you have an active role in your community with your neighbours and taking care of each other. That's what I think.
That's where we want it to go, for sure.
Definitely.
Right, well, if you've stayed with us, well, we're going to chop this up into, like, wee segments.
Probably two or three wee segments.
Absolutely. So on the YouTube channel. Something new. But if you've stayed with the full thing, thank you very much.
Yep.
Make sure to like and subscribe. If you're listening on Spotify, there'll be a couple of questions getting asked. Engage with it. Let us know what you think about AI. And
thanks to the people that have done that in the last couple of episodes as well. Well, we see you. Cheers.
This was the first AI generated content from Rebel City Podcast.